As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What it do, baby? It's the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. The podcast no one has ever asked for and continues to not care about. On today's episode, I got to interview my Instagram friend, Luke Rogers. His last name probably sounds familiar because he's related to Jordan and Aaron Rogers of the Green Bay Packers. Me and him became friends over Instagram, and we just met in Nashville. I'm sitting here in Annie F. Downs' studio where she records That Sounds Fun, and she was gracious enough to let me use her resources and her office and her podcast studio. So big shouts out to Annie. But yeah, me and Luke sat down and talked about fame. We talked about his career kind of being the Cooper Manning of the Rogers family, which I think is funny. And talked a little about bourbon and hot sauce and also Preachers and Sneakers. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Luke Rogers. What it do, baby? It's your boy, Preach McSneak, with a quick word from one of my newest sponsors, Uwazi Coffee Company. Uwazi was started by a couple of friends of mine who noticed that there was a true hunger crisis going on in Burundi, Africa, one of the hungriest countries in the world. And along with that, their greatest export, coffee. So these guys tried to come up with a way to help solve the hunger crisis in Burundi by creating Uwazi Coffee Company. Uwazi means transparency in Swahili, and these guys are going to donate $1 for every bag of coffee sold to help end hunger in Burundi. If that's something that interests you, head on over to uwazicoffee.com. That's uwazicoffee.com. Drop your email and you'll get first notification when the bags of coffee are ready. I'm talking to Luke Rogers, a.k.a. Cooper Manning 2.0.
Yeah, he sees all of me. 2.0 guy.
No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. But yeah, Luke is a good Instagram friend and now in-person friend who is a kind of like Cooper Manning, a businessman.
I'm a business.
You're a business, man. Jack of all trades, has some sports experience on the broadcasting side.
Yeah, right? I also had a company. I started a company, ran it for about 6 years. I had a sports licensing company.
Yeah, merch side.
Worked with the NFL, Major League Baseball, about 100 or so retired athletes. Did that for, it's a real sad story how that all ended, but did that for a number of years. I actually started that company when I was finishing my master's.
Oh, snap.
So in some ways, similar to your situation, although I don't think you set out to start anything.
No, I didn't.
Except maybe make your buddies laugh.
Yeah, I would have preferred to do it your way, but I guess I'll take
it. It's pretty neat, man. This whole thing is pretty neat. It'll be fun when the story comes out fully.
Like, yeah, it's I've appreciated how it's grown. I think people in a different position would have probably taken the fame right as it came, went on the Today Show, and then squandered the whole thing, and it would be completely irrelevant now. I decided to do it a little slower, mostly for my sanity and to save my marriage, and in turn, it might have a more sustaining presence than maybe what it could have been. But yeah, I wanted to talk to you because we're homies, and I think we're probably a lot alike. We're the same height.
That's true.
And
same build.
Same build.
We actually might bench the same if we're not being.
I mean,
I'm old though, so like, I got the old man strength. Actually, I figured this out, man. I got married in April. Put on about 40 pounds since I got married.
Good weight?
No. It's a lot of 12-ounce, a lot of 12-ounce Miller Lights and bourbon weight. Yeah, also a lot of eating. I have a sweet tooth. A lot of sweet tooth, sweets. I like it all. But no, it's funny. I got in the gym. So when we were talking earlier about doing my master's, I just worked out a ton. And I think.
Because the schedule's pretty nice.
This is not like a humble brag, but I think the strongest I've ever been was like 27, 28 there. I think I was, I put up like plus 400 plus on my bench.
Sheesh.
I was a monster. But I got in the gym this like 2 weeks ago with my buddy Big Vinny, who's like the strongest dude I know. He used to be 500 pounds. Now he weighs about 290.
Big Vinny's probably killed some people.
Now, Big Vinny, he's the nicest human being on the planet.
Oh, is he?
But he is like the strongest country strong dude. And so we put
corn fed.
We put three plates on the, we put 315 on there, and I moved it, and I was like, man, this is, I haven't been this strong. I don't know when, because I, you know, I got down and I tried to get abs for my wedding. Now I got some one.
Keyword is try.
Tried. Yeah. But I mean, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's it. That's so I did. I tried to do the same, and I was in the Marines at the time, and I'm not an athlete as a baseline, and even still, I couldn't get abs. But that's the one time where you're probably the most motivated if you're not being paid.
Also like young enough to make it happen,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to be able to work out consecutively and not be injured every third day.
Right. This is like the most bro conversation of all time. Like, what did you bench, man? Like,
yeah, so I was mainlining this protein powder.
Right, dude, yeah, it was
still waiting on that protein powder endorsement.
So I was counting my macros, man. It was
yeah, I've been kind of out of ratio.
Stacking creatine. And
I assumed, like, once I became a Christian influencer that the protein powders would come a-calling, but so far
I may not be your, like, key demo if you think about it.
It's more like Bibles and journals and stuff.
It's nice that people need those things.
But another thing we do have in common is we have severely outkicked our coverage. Plenty of pun intended. We have beautiful wives.
Yeah,
and we're incredibly average.
That was a football pun.
It was. Yeah.
Oh, you're a good looking man. You don't give yourself enough credit.
I've been thinking about it all day though. Like, what kind of football jokes can I make with the Rodgers fam? No, but really, like these Rodgers boys, they be marrying or getting engaged to incredibly attractive women, and there's not much to write home about as far as these guys.
We're
looks.
Very humble about our good looks.
you hide them behind a exquisite beard.
It's camouflage, man. Yeah, this beard is honest. Yeah, wife isn't a big fan of the beard.
Oh, she's not.
No, but I keep telling her it's winter, and this is what I do during the winter is I grow a beard. Although I didn't do it last year, so it's not a great argument.
No,
but I told
this
her,
is your first year married, right?
Yeah. So she's getting a fatter, hairier version of me, apparently.
This is what we do. We sell our absolute best selves, right, and then let ourselves go.
Yeah, mostly, like, I had some good stubble, and you know, I was probably weighing about 225, and now you're about 265, with a big beard.
I mean, you closed the deal. I mean, there's no reason to be shredded
anymore. That's a story in itself, but yeah.
I know. No doubt. All right, so I wanted to talk about a few things in your background. You're a little harder to find out about other than...
I prefer it that way.
Yeah, compared to your other bros, but... You spent some time in Thailand.
I did.
Was it just to sample the exquisite pad
no,
thai?
No, this is so, man, my story.
Tell me.
So I finished, I was pre-med in my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason I didn't play sports either was that in college is that I really thought I wanted to go to med school. So it's quite a, there are some people that pull off like collegiate sports and medicine, probably quite a few. Just I didn't think I could.
That's ridiculous.
I don't multitask very well.
Yeah.
So also kind of wanted to enjoy college. So I was pre-med, and when I graduated, it took me 4.5 because I didn't really decide that till my sophomore year. I just kind of dabbled around, you know, college.
Yep.
I always joke, Chico State, best 5 years of my life. Harvard of the West. About that time, my brother left Cal early. And was like, hey, will you move out with me wherever I get drafted? I said, sure, that sounds good. I need to study for the MCAT anyway. I'm not going to, like, go directly to med school. I'm kind of burned. So I did that. I moved to Green Bay for 9 months and studied for the MCAT. Took the MCAT, did well. But it was so burned out, like really, really burned out.
Because you were just straight waking up and studying.
And I had a job, too. I worked out there. So I worked and I studied. So it was full-time. I had a crazy I had a lot of like fun job. I just tried everything out there. Dude, I worked in sheet metal for a week and I hated it. Then I drove a
really
I,
saw that one through.
Dude,
didn't
I went
you?
To I work, well, you think about like it's industrial Midwest. So I went to work for a machine shop, like they made prototype machine. They built like the drive shafts for like Dodge Durangos or Rams or something. But I drove the delivery truck. So I got to see all of the Midwest. I'm from California. I never really spent any time out there. So that was really fun. Hmm. And then Friday I took the like the it was two brothers that owned the business, and their dad had been the previous owner, and so they still like patronized him. And on Fridays I drove him around and he got to like point things out and take scrap metal to the yard. So I was doing that and studying. It was actually an interesting job. But I was so burned out at the end of that and didn't want to stay in Wisconsin for the winter.
Yeah.
So I was at this crossroads where like, man, I'm so burned out. I really want to do medicine. I just invested like 4.5 years of my undergrad, 6 months of studying, 6-7 months of studying.
What's the draw to medicine though?
I just couldn't
do it. Is
that
random?
I don't know. My dad's a chiropractor, and he had said, if you, you know, I was like, what should I do what you do? And he's like, if I was to do it over again, I would get my DO, be a DO instead of a DC.
I see.
I was like, okay, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that I was like smart enough to do it. And so I did real well on all of everything, and then get this crossroads where I was like, I don't know exactly what I feel like I'm supposed to do. Like, I want a calling. Like, we all want a calling, right?
Yep.
a calling. So I had this idea at 23 years old that if I gave like a year of my life to God, that he would tell me what to do. And it seems like
it's so simple.
It seems simple, right? It seems naive as well. But I knew that also that I wanted to go surf somewhere. So I ended up moving to Australia right after.
That's the reality show, right?
No. This is, I went and did a DTS with YWAM. So I went to Bible school essentially for six months.
You're my second YWAM.
6 months
interview.
In the Sunshine Coast, a little town called Maroochydore in Queensland, Australia.
Okay.
And then once we'd finished our school part of it, they sent us out and we did like service projects and whatnot. And so we ended up living at an orphanage in Thailand for about a month.
Snap.
Which was unreal, man. The kids there, like it was life changing in 100 different ways. But really just to be with kids that have been abandoned and like just – they're just looking want to be loved on, and you get to do that. And then they had us do odd things they'd never done before. Like, we built an extra room onto the orphanage. I never built anything like that or framed.
Yeah.
But they're like, I mean, this is their only option. They got these, you know, these three, four, you know, white dudes. Like, they're up there like, yeah, can you guys build a room for us? Okay, we'll get.
What year was this?
This is 2006.
Mm.
So I turned 24 in Australia. And I was one of the old guys on the DTS. Most of those people at YWAM decided to go after high school.
What does that stand for? Christina
youth,
told me.
Youth with a Mission.
No, I mean DTS.
Discipleship Training School.
Okay. All right.
So it really was just like an immersive Bible school that was kind of compacted into all kinds of, you know, with the Old Testament, New Testament, like the.
So you learned a ton biblically, but then also you're trying to live out some of that. A novel.
It was cool.
Man.
I lived with like 10 dudes in this house where. We woke up every morning. I don't think I wore a shirt for 6 months. Like, dude, we'd run down and get in the surf at like 6 a.m.
That's so
surf
dope.
Surf for an hour, jump out, and the little bus. None of us had cars or anything. The bus would come pick us up. And it was like there was probably three other guys from the U.S. There was like two dudes from New Zealand. There was a couple Canadians. There was a couple guys from Switzerland. So dudes from all over the world you got to kind of become pals with. Still, I mean, I was in a couple of their weddings. Like, still talk to 3-4 of the guys. You know, here this is – almost 15 years later.
Yeah.
14 years later.
So that had a pretty significant impact.
Yeah, so I basically decided when I was out there, we had a fast during the week. It was pretty impactful. Like, it was...
Every week?
No, just this one week we had a fast. No,
oh, okay.
I got to been real skinny.
Yeah.
But it was funny. I kept just, like, I wanted... And not to get, like, too, like, churchy, Christian-y or anything, but, like, I really wanted, like, God to speak and tell me where to go and what to do with my life. And
mm-hmm.
And I kept asking him, God, like, what is it you want me to do? And I kept feeling like that the answer I was getting back was, what do you want to do?
And well, that's nice to get.
And I was like, that's not what I want to hear.
Right.
You know, and but through that process, it was like, I know what I don't want to do. And that's how maybe also as important as knowing what you do want to do. And I knew at that point I didn't want to go to med school. Just the idea of jumping into another 4 years of school and then 2 years of residency and then getting out and then that's the thing I have to do for the rest of my life seemed like too much of a box that for me to live inside of.
Yeah.
Just for my personality.
Because that is a very, very defined track.
Right. You know, and then, you know, looking back now, being 37, looking back, almost 38 here, it would have, I'd be on a completely different track. I wouldn't be sitting here. I mean, that's
probably
for sure.
Pretty stressed out.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I wouldn't know if I'd be in Nashville. I don't know. I don't necessarily know where I'd be, but
yeah.
I don't know if I'd be here. So that it's cool, man. Like, it was a really life altering, like, paradigm shifting trip to sleep on a concrete floor, a dirt floor, the blanket, mm-hmm. for essentially 3 months, like, be around people that have nothing and yet act like they have that and act completely content.
Yeah.
Or people that just need loved. The kids just want to be loved on. And that's all they're, that changes their lives. There's just like a lot of really, even unpacking it now this far, far removed, it's still pretty amazing to think about the things that I got to see and do and be. But anyway, that's a long version of the story to say that when I came home, I knew I wasn't going back to med school, came home after a year, knew that a pre-med degree didn't get me exactly where I needed to be either. So I figured I could go get a master's in business. That'll give me more options. Need more options, right?
And an extended college experience.
Right, yeah. So I moved to San Diego and did that. I wanted to be somewhere I could surf too, so I continued the surfing thing.
Heck,
moved
yeah.
to San Diego.
How did the swells compare to Australia?
Oh, the water is so much better. It's warmer and better in Australia.
Oh, yeah?
There's some good spots in San Diego, I'm not going to lie, but the water's cold pretty much year-round.
Mm.
Like, I didn't wear a wetsuit the entire time. Like, there was times in the summer when I first got to Australia, which is like January, summer, the water was so warm you could almost feel yourself like sweat in it.
Oh,
when
yeah.
When you were like surfing, it was that warm.
In San Diego, it's like 70 degrees the whole
time.
Yeah,
in the winter in Australia, like, the most you needed was just like a rash guard top, like a topper. Never got cold, like, and San Diego never gets warm. You can basically wear a wetsuit year round. You might, in the middle of summer, you'd be cold, but you might get away with like going in your board shorts.
I live in that environment. I'm hot all the time.
So, it's a big man problem. I mean, like, here, I'm hot all the time.
Yeah, my wife really like complains because all I talk about is like, God, are you hot? I'm just freaking hot.
Right.
Anyways, so you got back, go get your MBA, San Diego State, and then what? When does Pro Merch come along?
It was about middle of. Probably like middle of my second year.
Full time?
Yeah, kind of. A full time student at the time. But what I did was I had this idea and I thought it was a good idea. And so I just started dabbling, just not super serious, but just wanting to like kind of just test the waters. Cause I had a little bit extra time. I had extra time because I was a student, right? So I had this idea that like when I went to NFL games, especially, that like the offerings in the pro shop were just. The same
and overpriced.
Like, and the same they've been for like 30 years. This is 2007, so I'm looking at, like, there wasn't like a whole lot of innovation being done in like
jerseys, t-shirts,
anything
like,
yeah, all that stuff, right? It was just the same, which now people think is really cool because it's come back around.
Right.
But I saw there was a need in the marketplace, and so the long the short is I got some NFL dudes I know involved, and I did like a licensing deal with them to use their likeness, because one thing that the players own in licensing spaces, they own what they look like. So their name, their number, what they look like. They own that personally. Now, if you work with more than 5 players in the NFL for one, or I believe it's 4 in Major League Baseball, then the next one you have to have a player, like a union license. And so we end up doing that. End up getting ourselves into Target. I brokered a Target deal. We're in 2,200 Target stores, I believe.
Dang.
Nationwide. So we went from doing something in my bedroom to having like a full-time
That's a real
gig.
Freaking business.
Yeah. And then learned a lot of hard lessons. And
this is your first like foray into business. And now you're doing scaled CPG type deals.
We threw a Super Bowl party 1 year. I had like 8 Hall of Famers at the party. Like it was like crazy.
That's bananas.
At one point. Yeah.
Are you swimming in money at this point?
No. Uh-uh. No, because the problem is that we scaled it too fast for one. And for two, we reinvested everything back into the company.
Yeah.
And
keep growing.
Yep. And we had a series of unfortunate events that kind of that ended up ending the thing. And I mean, really, after 6 years, like in 3 months, the entire thing went away.
Wow.
And it mostly was due to licensing, like the fact that, and being reliant on a big box partner, which.
It's like that was your huge leg to stand
on. Yeah.
And
admittedly so, those kind of. Places are brand killers. Like they don't care. There's another one in line, right?
Yep.
So we just got screwed over by our partners, and I was
so that deal disintegrated.
Yeah, and I was that went, and then the NFL jumped in. We were done so well. The NFL jumped in, and they didn't want us in the same space they were too, because we were selling better than they were, and So then we kind of got blocked from a lot of different things, and it just ended up being not a viable.
That's what you get for being good, right?
Right. But you know what? The thing is I don't have any regrets in the sense I wouldn't have done anything different. Like we tried to do everything. Me and my partner did everything we did with integrity.
Yeah.
And do the right thing and pay our bills and honor our contracts and a lot of that stuff. You know, I'm sure a lot of you know, and you know that this stuff doesn't really happen a lot in the business world. People do what they do to get ahead and do, you know, and what it doesn't, the consequences are.
Right. It's just business.
It's just business. And
so did you end up like going away with any money at all, or was it pretty just like.
No, we paid it. We paid all our debts and then.
So on to the next thing.
Close it up.
Whew.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead. You know, you talk to a lot of business leaders that talk about, you know, failing fast and failing forward. Like, I'm sure you did learn a ton of really helpful business lessons, but I doubt anybody wants to sign up to run a business that freaking disintegrates in 3 months.
Sure, no. After 6 years, yeah. No, I think you'd rather learn that in business school.
Yeah.
as a case study, right? You're like, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, instead of like, I mean, that must have been a multi-million dollar business.
Mm-hmm.
On the top line.
It was, yeah. I mean, we had $10 million POs.
So, yeah.
I mean, you know, when you're looking at valuation, 20x cap. I mean, yeah, it was a good business. And our whole thing was that once we got through.
This is pre-Amazon being like the behemoth that it is now.
Yeah.
Like you're doing a significant.
Yeah, significant amount of online business, Shopify and all that kind of stuff. And it was a fun time. It also was, man, it's one of those things too. Like this is, I don't know what to do with this still today. This is how many years later? This was 6 years now, 6 years ago now. Like I think we always can look back on our lives and like, you can understand why things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of look at the grander plan and like, okay, that makes sense. I still can't really make sense of that. And
like it's still just a big blip on your life.
Yeah, and you know what, man? I think sometimes, and here's the thing, sometimes, and this is just like me trying to mature, and I think that sometimes we don't always get that satisfaction. I mean, there's a lot of things that we will look back, and a lot of people can look back on their lives and say, I don't know why that happened. And maybe we don't know the side of heaven.
Yep.
It's frustrating because you look at like, hey, that was 6 years of my life. I could have really been farther doing something else. But what I just don't know that I would do something different. I'd still chase that because it really did.
Because I mean, it was a good idea in the right time with the right
space,
connections.
And there's a couple companies that actually swooped up most of our contracts, like our retired athlete contracts. Roots of Fight is one.
Mm-hmm.
Like 47.
Mm-hmm.
These guys went and swooped up the things we had done, and they're.
So that
they
validates
just,
the idea there. Itself.
I mean, Roots of Fight got bought by Under Armour, and they had like kind of was just the timing was right, and they weren't vested in leagues. That was the. If we could do it over again, it's this thing. You can do current players, in the league, or you can do retired players, which is you don't deal with all the licensing restrictions the league puts over you or the union. So maybe I'd do that differently, but. At the same time, like we never would have been able to scale our business to have been in every single Target store if we hadn't gone and brokered league deals.
Yeah.
So it's just not very interesting.
But I mean, to back to your point, it's interesting to me because I would like to run a company one day, and if this doesn't work out, which it very well might not. But I don't think. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's nowhere in the Bible that guarantees that God is going to tell you what your plan or what the point. I mean, the point is for His glory and for you to. Live for Him,
right,
and love your neighbor. That's it. I mean, it's not like I think people have a very common misconception that you're supposed to understand every event in your life.
I also think that we live in a space too where we are always living for that next thing, and it's a destination, right? We're always living for that destination, whatever that may be. And God has always been the God of the journey. Like it's about the Exodus is about making His people stay in the wilderness until they learned, right?
Yep.
And about that journey, or till that, God has always promised that He'll be there at our destination, but for Him, it isn't ever that destination. It's always the journey and the process. And I think that's a big problem in our society today too, though, is that a lot of us guilty. I'm guilty as the next dude, guilty as hell to living like for the next thing and not being present.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And that's maybe the answer too. In a lot of ways, is that maybe
he wants you to be freaking content,
or maybe he had, you know, maybe yeah that, or maybe there was like something, there was some movement or some refining of character things, or there was lessons to be learned there, and you just don't ever know. That's the thing. Maybe this side of heaven, we'll never know that maybe there's something that happened in there that really had it worked out, that had been catastrophe or ruin, yeah. Or you know, maybe God was really looking out for me. And if he's a good and sovereign God that cares about even the smallest things and numbers the hairs on our head, you know, and knew us in our mother's wombs, then he cares enough about the big things as well that the small things are the big things. And that's a confusing thing in some ways, but all I'm saying is that, like,
I'm with you.
This path is the path I'm on, and this is the path I'm supposed to be on.
I do question
in my humanity and me question, like, why did I have to learn a lesson that way?
Because it feels like a failure.
It feels like a condemnation too. You weren't good enough, or you didn't do it good enough.
Yep.
But I can't look back and say, I don't know what I would have done differently.
Right. And maybe, I mean, like, you know, putting myself in your shoes, maybe it was purely just a maturity thing. Like him saying, like, look, you probably put a lot of identity in this freaking business,
yeah,
and this will go away overnight, just as I gave it to you.
Right.
And I mean, you know, can you imagine being married during that time?
No, like, I could have done it if I was married.
Right.
Because I didn't pay myself for a year plus.
Which, yeah, I'm sure you like also gained some level of maturity and like self-awareness that is probably going to help you in marriage than you maybe would have trying to run that freaking business,
right,
and putting her second.
Yeah, marriage is way more important than that,
yeah,
at the end of the day. And that's, you know, that's the economy of God. And really, it's a crazy. Anyway, so that's actually what brought me to Nashville. Opened an office here for ProMerch with my business partner, Austin. And it was right at the tail end of Jordan's career here, so it was fun to get to, you know, be around. And then he went to the NFL, and we ended up getting to live together, like, in the offseason here.
That's dope.
And then we became roommates. And so
you all have a good relationship.
Yeah, because, you know, he's 6.5 years younger than me. So by the time that I was, you know, in college, he was in high school. And by the time I had left and gone to Australia, he was finishing high school. And always, so we kind of didn't ever get to be grown-up friends. And that gave us a real cool opportunity to do that. And that
was fun.
It was awesome, man. It was so awesome to be like become best buds with your baby brother.
Yeah. And see him progress through his career.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I still think he's like that little 12-year-old kid. You know, that when I would have been 18 plus and a freshman in college, like he's this little 12-year-old kid, right? And, but he's the best.
He's crushing it now.
He's the best. He really is.
Like, he's an example too, because of somebody that probably could have squandered the fame. And
right.
It seems like he's pivoted that into something that's more sustainable.
Yeah.
The SEC commentary deal, the freaking whatever house rehab show,
Cash Pad,
like all that stuff is more recurring than being a freaking reality star.
Right.
Like for those listening, Jordan Rogers was on The Bachelor, Bachelorette, and is engaged to JoJo.
Getting married this summer. Yeah.
I haven't seen the invitation yet, but I assume it's going to be sent.
Oh, it's pretty elaborate. Yeah. It shows up in person.
Oh, okay.
In a giant bejeweled box.
Good. Yes. Okay, good. Yeah. No, I'll be on the lookout for that. Look, we've all got bills to pay, so let's take a quick second to hear from my sponsors, and we'll be right back to our conversation. Hey, you, let's talk about pants. A pretty necessary item for most people in the world these days. More specifically, let's talk about pants from MacWeldon.com. Mack Weldon, who's one of our newest sponsors for the Preaching Sneakers podcast, believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and a simple shopping experience. They will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. They even have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial. For me, I purchased a couple pair of sweatpants, which are immensely comfy, a couple pairs of stretchy work pants, because Lord knows I need that in 2020, and then a few pairs of boxer briefs, if you care to know what I wore in that regard. There you go. For my listeners only, you can go to MacWeldon.com and use the code PREACHERS to get 20% off your first order. That's right. If you go to MacWeldon.com, use the code PREACHERS, you get 20% off your first order. Do it now. But yeah, so Luke is the much wiser, more seasoned member of the family. So that's cool that y'all are homies still.
Yeah.
And they live in Dallas,
yeah,
right?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to connect with them at some point. If not, just to dab
them up. Absolutely.
So what are you doing in Nashville now? Or like, do you have any businesses now? I know you're...
No, I don't. Like, which is actually nice after the last experience.
Stability.
Completely, transparently honest is that, a part of me is very gun-shy. Like, and I think I have an entrepreneurial spirit, but, a lot of me is real gun-shy to take that risk. And I have a family.
Yeah.
I got married last April, and... so it's not just my own skin I'm risking here.
I totally get that.
So
knowing deep down that I could do it. If I went all in, I could do it. But also you have this new responsibility to say, hey, I'm not going to be some overzealous risk taker now that I'm in charge or I have someone else to be responsible for.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right. I mean, you have to basically die or sell out to whatever idea that is in order to see it be successful.
And it's tough, being men, our pride is intrinsically wrapped up in our vocation, right? And the things we do, and then our perception of our own success, and also the world's perception of our success, whether we want to admit it or not, we're really wrapped up in that. I think that's a lot of, when we're grabbing coffee and talking about fame, that's a lot of what I think is really brilliant about what you've done with your platform is it exposes the trappings of fame. It exposes the trappings of money, the love of money, or even just the perception of that. Because I'm not gonna sit here and judge anyone's heart, but the perception of that is what's important, especially in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think going back to the fame thing, I think one of the things that's been interesting to sit in my shoes is just understanding. I had lunch with my pastor Darren Whitehead last week, and we talked about this a bit. Just because
what church is that?
Church of the City in Franklin.
Church of the City. Yeah, that's Chris McClarney's church.
Yeah, I've met Chris, yeah.
Big shouts out to Chris McClarney.
He always rocks his Beluga Yeezys.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
He always sends me
pictures. I gave Darren a little grief. I was like, man, when are you going to bust out some shoes and get on preachers? And he's like, man, nah, I don't think so. I'm
careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly right. But
what do you think? I mean, what do you think about – you've experienced different levels of this whole fame thing. And you and I connected purely over the account.
Right.
I don't want this podcast to be stroking my ego, but what do you think about, I guess, the greater discussion around fame and consumerism and celebrity within church?
I think honestly, fame is the biggest trap that there is. And it's honestly it's the worst managed thing that we as humans can have, because at the end of the day, the human soul, and people, we weren't meant to be worshipped. And there's a lot of idolization that goes on, whether you end up on the Instagram or the social media, or you end up on the TV. All you have to do is look at our election cycle and think about how much money is spent to put people's faces on our TV.
Yep.
To influence what we think and do and our respect and our thoughts, right? And so it's a shaping tool. Fame, we weren't ever meant to be famous. We just weren't. We weren't meant to be worshipped. We see that, I think ultimately there are very few people that become uber famous and are able to use their platform to not be self-serving that it doesn't expose their worst traits and then ultimately become their ruin. Ruin's an interesting thing, and I don't want to be careful what I'm saying, but ruin in the sense of you lose the things that are actually important. So it ruins your marriage, your relationships, your, across the board, whatever.
Your sense of reality.
Man, I always said that, the God's economy, that the currency, the people are the currency of heaven. So God, people are what matters most, right? But in man's economy, it's not. It's the individual. It's money. Those things sit above people.
Mm-hmm.
And fame, it puts you again at the top of man's economy. And it's just you're enabled in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
because people will let you off the hook for things that us normal people will probably wouldn't be let off the hook for, right?
Hmm.
From a character standpoint, even from a legal standpoint, we see that play out.
Don't you think it could be the opposite, though? Some people get eviscerated on social media for saying certain things while common people wouldn't.
Sure. Right, and that's a double-edged sword, right? Of fame is that you kind of have a bigger megaphone, but it also have a bigger spotlight. So
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I've thought about this now, especially like, you know, with the prospect of doing the whole book thing, how to, because yes, everyone brings up how ironic it is that I am making a few dollars from this now, and most likely will have some type of notoriety around this. How to deal with being a quote unquote celebrity through this in a healthier way than maybe some people on Instagram are doing. I don't know what the answer is because, like, naturally, I like attention. I like making people laugh. I like the idea that what I'm doing is important or is helpful or is entertaining, and would love for someone to, you know, like fulfill a writer contract for me with a bunch of freaking exquisite snacks and drinks. But there again,
only brown M&Ms.
Yeah, and lukewarm Red Bulls.
Oh, yes, exactly.
But the idea still holds true. It's like if we're just as believers, like if we're to point towards the creator of the universe, there should never be, I don't think, any situation where it's like, it's about me, bro. Like,
right.
This is how funny and awesome I am.
Right.
And so it's like this bigger discussion around if there's any appropriate place for celebrities. Because then there's like, so like a lot of people bring up the Justin Bieber's and Kanye's conversion. It's like, okay, objectively, they're reaching a ton of people. I don't know if it's, I can't say whether or not it's reaching them with the right thing or not, but objectively, they're reaching a ton of people, yet still maintaining like, hey, this is Justin freaking Bieber, huge,
right?
Like mega star, security detail, everything. What is that? Like, why? I mean, naturally, people idolize these guys more than the creator of the universe. And so I just don't know what to do with that.
I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, ultimately, it requires us to sit in a place of judgment, like judgment seat of God, which I don't want to sit there and judge their hearts. But I mean, it would seem, and I would hope that, like, in the situations of Kanye and Bieber, that they are a really good example of redeeming the platform they've been given.
Yeah,
here's the thing, though, is that it's amazing. Yes, their reach is now amazing for the name of Jesus. The spotlight and the microscope have gotten that much bigger, though, that every little time we fail, we're all going to fail. We're essentially built to fail.
Yep.
Because of our flesh.
Yep.
They're gonna trip and fall, and it's gonna be that much of a bigger spotlight and microscope on that, right? So now
that's the risk that they're playing with now,
like, right?
Because everyone is just. I mean,
waiting.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, partially why my account blew up is like people love to have a reason to hate on Christians that say, hey, I'm trying my best to live for something bigger than
hypocrisy.
Myself.
People want to point out hypocrisy.
Yeah, but it's like the pastor of my church talks about all the time. It's like this is a place for sick people to come. Like this isn't a place where perfect people come.
Right.
Of course there's hypocrites. Like everyone's hypocritical because we're all mother freaking sinners.
Right.
And none of us, if we claim to have this whole thing figured out or claim to be without sin, then we're doomed.
Right.
So yeah, so that's a really good point about like they just have to be so careful.
I was thinking about before I was coming here. I was in the pool of Jerry Jones and thinking about stuff in the shower. but I was thinking about Jesus, right? If we're supposed to follow Jesus, I mean that's what we say we do as Christians, and we want to follow Jesus and emulate Jesus. He avoided a lot of situations where he would have been in the spotlight. Like I mean, he didn't want the big crowds, like even though he got them anyway. I don't know why I was thinking about this, and I don't even know what to make of this. But when Satan tempted him and took him on the mountain and showed him that, oh, you know, I'll give you all of this, if you bow down to me, there's something somewhat in my mind, somewhat similar, in a sense of like you to gain all of that,
the world, the platform, the attention, the perks.
You're essentially putting some of that stuff above God, which is an idol.
And like, how do you defend against that? Like,
I don't know. I just don't know. And I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that, like,
well, I'm agreeing with you. Like, naturally, as humans, if we're given those things, how do we not fall into that stuff, meaning so much more to our lives than following Jesus?
Sure.
Like, because it tastes so good and it feels so good. Like having a small ounce of people being like, oh shit, you're the Preachers and Seekers guy. Whoa, dude, you're so hilarious. Ooh, that feels good to me.
Right.
And that feels too good to me.
Right.
It makes me feel like, oh yeah, I did this. I'm awesome.
Right.
And that's such a drug.
Oh, it is. It's living for the applause of man, right? Like that, yeah. That's, I think it's a heart check. Like, it's like, am I living for the applause of man or am I living for the, you know, for the applause of my Savior, for the well done, good and faithful servant? Like, if we all checked ourselves, we all live for the applause of man.
Yeah.
So often. I mean, just think about the things we put on our feet, the things we wear.
We want to be unique.
Or we do,
want to be
right?
Seen.
Right.
That's
and
such
we
a good
want to
word.
Be perceived a certain, yeah, it's a perception thing. That's what I think always is what's really interesting to me about the account is it's the perception. It's that not having nice things is not inherently bad. And having awesome, desirable, scarce shoes, I love that stuff. I mean, I joke with my wife, I spend money on two things. I spend money on shoes and bourbon. And now that I'm married, I don't get to spend hardly any of it.
On either.
On either. But those things are inherently bad. It's the...
Having them have you.
Yeah, having them have you. And I think it's also the perception that those things bring, right? It's
yeah.
It's like, what message are you sending? If we really are, like, there's psychologically, if what we say is 60% body language, so people are reading us, what is that 60, or I don't know if that's the right percentage, but I know it's something more than 50%,
yeah.
Right? The
okay.
things that we actually perceive body language and
more than just the words,
right? Then what do we, then if we're in a pedestal where we put ourselves, you and I, as followers of Jesus, or in the ministry, then I think we have to find that place to be careful to say, what are we serving, you know? You know, and a lot of arguments are, let's be, and this is crazy, I just think about this all the time, like, that's why I actually love the account, not, you know, and then you're a funny dude, so I'm stroking it here.
Thank you.
Right? But I mean, like, it's entertaining to see, but, like, why are we, who are we trying to impress at the end of the day, right? And the argument of all things to all people to me is such a hollow and ridiculous and stupid argument, because a pair of sneakers didn't save anybody's soul. I'm sorry. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in some ways, if you dress yourself in the, it reminds me of the Pharisees back in the day that wanted to look a certain way, right? And it was to be pious and to be holy. And that was what was attainable. I think that if we look at our culture now, that's not the pinnacle. The pinnacle is like to look famous and affluent and special, right?
And have big influence.
Right. Like, yeah, this influencer thing.
Be sought after yeah. as a speaker. And, you know, it at a micro level, I'd imagine every single person on my account would say, like, dude, these were given to me. These things don't own me. I've given away a bazillion dollars.
Sure.
But at a macro level, you know, there's a bigger cultural discussion. Like, dude, this is clearly like a shit ton of consumerism. And clearly celebrity. We're clearly treating a lot of these guys as celebrities,
right.
Videoing them as they get out of the car, walking into the worship center. Like, that, you know, is God okay with that? Or does he care if we're treating, like, you know, this is on us for idolizing these
100%.
Dudes. Like you see it in the hearts of people in the comments. Like, you know, there's a limit. And you can tell who idolizes who because of who defends them. So, like, a lot of people were okay with my account until I posted about Tim Tebow. And then thousands of people came at me about me saying Tim Tebow, you know, I was clearly making a joke, but they freaked out saying.
Yeah, it was clearly satire.
Yeah,
like, to me, it's like the Babylon Bee when you have Snopes like fact checking the Babylon Bee and you're like,
yeah.
Have we been so quick to be angry that we forget that there's satire?
People
out
are
there?
So quick to want to get me. They're waiting to get me, and I'm not going to let them get me. But it's a picture about who we idolize. And all of us are guilty of idolizing people. Like,
yeah.
if I saw John Mayer in the streets, I'd probably freak the frick out.
Yeah.
But that's
John Mayer. Like, that's the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yeah. I mean, he's, yeah. I mean, I, you know, shamefully idolize that guy.
Bill Murray. I'd freak out.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that we all have to contend with. But even in the ministry context, that's ridiculous to make So, like, I was talking to Shane Claiborne about this earlier this week, and he basically was saying, like, for a guy that was born in a manger, killed on a cross, and buried in a borrowed tomb, you sure can make a lot of money off of preaching about that guy. And you sure can get a huge-ass platform. He didn't say that, but by speaking about that guy. It seems jacked up to me.
Sure does. I also think that, like, the tradition of ministry, you know, over the ages has been one of, like, servitude and piety. You know, I'm a nerd. I'm reading a book right now about the Knights Templar, the entire history. And they're, like, and I started thinking, actually, it has interesting parallels because one of the things that they talked about in going into the ministry, and there's all kinds of screwed up things about their theology and dogma, but the idea was that if you went in service of God, you gave up all of the things. Like you chose a life of what's the right word? Basically being poor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is my personal thing goes for the ministry. It also goes for politicians. And it's like if you choose to be in a business or vocation, say a vocation of public service or servitude, then having a lot of things and nice things and having a lot of money, it comes completely into conflict with your job description. And you know, I could be wrong about this, but that's my thing. Like, you don't go into politics to become rich, and yet that's what we're seeing. I don't think you go into the ministry to become rich, and yet that's what we're seeing on a portion of that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very much in conflict with their job description.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that's what you kind of hit a nerve with that. And it hits a nerve with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm not going to name any politicians for the keeping this not political, but if you went not a millionaire into politics and you've come out a millionaire now, I think there's a problem with that.
Hmm.
I don't think that's
self-serving and not serving 100% of the people.
And that's the key right there.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's difficult to make that judgment from Instagram, but to your point, is that doesn't matter. It's like you're curating the image that you're putting out into the sphere.
Right, and your point to all that is you posted this picture out there. Like you're not going and like and having people preaching sneakers, people show up in their hoodies and take photos of people preaching. This is what they've chosen to put out on their own platforms.
Yep.
And so what message are you sending?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're seeing like you want to be seen, right?
I mean, that's what it looks like.
That's what it looks like. Yeah, and it also looks like, look at the cool stuff I have.
Right, and if not, say that. Or if not, and people question you about the sneakers and, you know, calling you a wolf in sheep's clothing, own the sneakers. I don't know, or put your account on private. So it's like, that's the thing. It's like, I've talked with several that.
People can't give that up, though. They can't.
I know.
Yeah, it's the addiction.
They like the benefits of having 500,000 followers, but they don't want any criticism that comes from having their life in the public sphere. It's like perfect example is like John Gray had a reality TV show on Oprah's network.
Yeah.
And then he publicly like took over this church in South Carolina. And now him and Ron Carpenter, who has a church on the West Coast, are in this big public lawsuit feud about who's paying what lease payments. Like, dude, play stupid games, get stupid prizes.
Right, 100%.
Like, you sign up to have a public persona, publicly take over a church, publicly leave Joel Osteen's church, and now you're embroiled in this conflict? Dude, welcome to being a public figure.
Right, the microscope got bigger because you asked for
it. Yeah,
that,
so, I mean, so, like, all that is so separate from saying, Jesus died for your sins, you're a sinner, like, doomed to hell, and the only way to heaven is through accepting him as your savior. None of that speaks to that. All that speaks to building my own personal brand or building my own personal platform. And that's what fires me up. Like, I don't really care about the sneakers. I just care about, like, the dilution of the gospel that I believe is life-changing.
Yeah.
All that other shit doesn't matter.
It doesn't. And that's – and, again, it also plays into the whole, like, this Western – prosperity gospel without saying it, they're saying it. They're like, look at, I'm the pastor and like, look what God has done for me. And yet, if you look at the last 2,000 years of history, like the people that sold out for Jesus and served the kingdom, they ended up upside down on crosses.
Yes.
They ended up martyred. They ended up, you know, they end up giving their life in prison. Paul, I mean, you look through the entire Bible, and I have to think, like, if you believe the Bible, if you believe in Jesus, you got to believe the Bible and the Bible 100%. That's just the cherry picking doesn't serve you, and it also doesn't, you don't want to follow Jesus if you got to believe everything that's in there, right? Jesus himself, who was fully God and fully man, like you said just a second ago, came in a manger, right? So he avoided being famous. He hung out with 12 dudes, one that he knew was gonna betray him to his death, and he let those other 11 or so spread the news of him. And you know, he spoke in front of big crowds, but most of the time I think he avoided that. I think he knew that there was, I'm not gonna do a sermon about fame, but if we're supposed to follow Jesus, I just don't.
How do you make two things famous at the same time?
Right, and I don't think he was like wearing like the coolest Tevas and tunics, you know?
Yeah, Tevas and tunics. That's another good account. But no, I mean, I at least get why this happens. Like, you know, Mike Todd in Tulsa is one of the best speakers I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, of course, he is going to attract more people than some Joe Schmo in Nebraska.
100%.
And I just, you know, I don't really know what the tangible thing to do about this is, because, like, clearly he's living in his gift, like, speaking amazing. I just think it's worth all of us examining this self, or all of this is worth examining ourselves, and it's worth pointing to this as a cultural thing in the Big C Church that we need to address, like, pastors included.
Right.
Like, yes, maybe the standards, even though it says in the Bible they're different, maybe the standards aren't different and none of us should ever have expensive sneakers. Maybe that's worth coming to the conclusion to, but
It begs a question.
Yeah.
It's something needs to be talked about. We have to address it, because I can't imagine. I mean, I just try to think about outside of our first world American bubble and what that looks like to somebody in another country following Jesus.
Right.
I don't know how the two mix.
Yeah.
And it's worth, I mean, I'm saying, I don't know what the answer is, but I know that this discussion needs to be happening, and this platform needed to happen. And I think that's why you're sitting here. I don't know why I'm sitting here.
I've been questioning it the entire time.
You know, I like to try out my jokes on preachers and sneakers.
Yeah. So far, none have landed, but it's okay.
That's all right.
You got a bomb at first.
Not all of us are gifted.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Not to name drop, but I was talking to Shane Claiborne earlier this week, and he basically.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's. You should look him up. He's
the Shane and Shane guy?
No.
I honestly don't know.
He's the third Shane. He's he used to work alongside Mother Teresa before she died. And then now has this, like, makes his own clothes. It's like over indexes on living Jesus's lifestyle.
Okay.
Like, lives in poverty in Philadelphia. He's written a couple books.
Do you write the one about living like Jesus?
I don't know.
Like,
I haven't read
Living Like Jesus?
I don't know. I haven't read any of his books yet, but I plan to. So it shows how much I know. But he basically made a good point about, like, Western Christians' lack of proximity to suffering is what makes it so easy for all of us to live in this kind of comfy Christian bubble. Like,
the
So, like, if we had more exposure to those that had actual no shit suffering, I think we would have so much more heart for this kind of thing to, like, deny ourselves. Like, even for me, like, living in Dallas, I look right through the dudes that are begging for money on the side of the road, because it's just so, like, it doesn't affect me. I can basically get around it. And I mean, to say that I worship a guy that spoke so much about caring for the poor, the widow, the orphan, I'd do a whole hell of a lot more for everything else than caring for those three groups of people.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth all of us trying to seek those opportunities out.
I mean, I'm with you. That's why I'm such a big proponent of, like, if your calling is not to be a full-time missionary abroad, like, to actually to take some time and do some short-term missions to get out, and because it is, like, eye-opening, like kicking the nuts kind of thing to get out there and to see, like, wow, what a privileged life. I mean, shoot, we got podcasts right now. We're talking on a podcast, like,
in the air conditioned,
privileged lives that we have that aren't afforded or enjoyed by, you know, the majority. If you think about the majority of this world, and It's a good perspective. I think it's, again, like my whole thing with all of this is it's perception and perspective. It's like, what message are you sending and what is your perspective on that message? Like, is
I think it's, I hope we can get answers at some point. I know we're out of time. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, it didn't really go the way I expected it to.
That's all right. It generally doesn't.
I didn't get to tell any of my funny stories.
I know.
We had to be real serious.
Really missed out on all of those opportunities.
I should have brought some of that bourbon by.
Yeah, you should have.
It's that a little early for that.
I know. It's like 9 a.m. in Nashville.
I think most of our wives would be like, what is wrong with these guys?
Call me back when you sober up.
Yeah.
If anyone, speaking of platforms, if anyone wants to find you online, is there any way they can do that?
Yeah, all of my accounts are the Luke Rogers. And I always joke
with
about that.
With a DG, not a J.
Yeah, it's because it's Luke.Rogers was taken. And I think I made my account sometime after Remember the Titans came out. And it was like, the running back, y'all. And I was like, the Luke Rogers,
you've
y'all.
You definitely dated yourself when Remember the Titans
came
man,
out. Oh, man, I'm 37. I'm all right with that. Like, man, speaking of old, I went to play Hoops of the Y this last week. This is the last story I'm going to give you.
Okay.
This kid was probably 6'7". I was guarding against him. And he was trying to play a little physical, but he's probably weighed 160 pounds. So I had him by 100 pounds.
Yeah.
And he was trying to get physical, and then I was just not letting it happen. And I started talking to him. I'm like, how old are you, man? And he's like, 17. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I was literally
20.
Be your dad.
I was 20 when you were born. So maybe I should be, like, mixing it up with this 17. This kid had some game, though. He had some
did
game,
he?
Yeah.
But did you check him?
I mean, oh, yeah. And I kind of felt bad for it after.
Because you hurt him?
No, just, like, you know, you just – I told him, man, I was like, if you're going to play physical, this is grown man basketball. And, you know, and I'm
– these are my courts at the Y.
And I'm here cashing checks, not writing checks. It's – gosh. And then I hurt for the next 2 days.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Yeah. Pride comes before the fall.
Oh, Lord.
All right.
Yeah,
Luke
man.
Luke Rogers, thanks for spending some time with me. It was as good as what I paid for it.
Yeah, the price is right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's go get some of that bourbon.
Sounds good.
All right.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.